You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world, and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
And good morning, listeners. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 8:55 AM. And it's a fabulous day today. On the 20th of March 2026. We have such a pumping studio this morning. We've got myself, Stephanie. We've got Zane.
Morning, top of the Zane. Morning tears.
Yeah, absolutely, top of the morning. We've got Mary.
Good morning, everyone.
And we have a guest presenter with us, Zara.
Good morning. Hey, 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 everyone.
Yeah. So, and we may have... I'm not sure if she'll come on air at all, but we also have our friend, ally, and just awesome person, Carrie, as well, who may be popping in and out. So, yeah, good morning, listeners. We just want to acknowledge, before we go any further, that 3CR and Green Left recognise that this show is being broadcasted from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, the original rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of this land. Australia was founded on the attempted genocide and dispossession of the first people, and we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. As socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all the First Peoples in their struggle for justice and right to their land. And sorry, Mary, I realise I think I just jumped in there. Apologies. I was just on a roll. So now today we've got some exciting interviews lined up. We'll be doing it hopefully a live cross actually to public housing towers where there's a bit happening down there this morning with some asbestos removal, but unfortunately the residents are still in those towers. So we'll be speaking with Darren and hopefully some other activists down there about what's going on. We've also got an interview later on with Katarina from the National Farms Director, and she's an organiser with the United Workers Union, and she'll be speaking to us about the members' first ticket. And then, of course, we've got the lovely Zara, which we'll be getting to chat to her about things that are happening for Kurdish people, and she'll be able to speak to that much better than I can at this time of the morning. But it'll be an exciting show. So, yeah. But there's been a lot happening this week, of course. I'm not sure if anyone wants to, like, kick off a bit of a discussion, like, how we sort of some of the things that have been going on globally. And
well, of course, the war on Iran is still going and getting worse. And many people are being killed, also in Lebanon. I heard an Iranian speaker yesterday talk about what might happen after the war finishes. And he said that for Iranian people in Iran in particular, it is mixed feelings. On the one hand, they want the war to stop because who wants to be bombed? Mm. On the other hand, they will fear the day after the war as well. And he also spoke about how this notion that they're going to rise up even if this regime is decapitated is just a complete fantasy, because you've got to imagine, you know, what it's been like before the war. There was such terrible repression and killings going on, so they were brutalized. Now the war has started, people are being killed, the environment is being destroyed, And sadly, also probably many of those beautiful historical sites in Iran are being destroyed as well, or well, maybe not completely destroyed, but certainly hit, and will have to be looked at when the war is over. But anyhow, so all of that was all of that's happening at the moment. They're fearing for themselves, their families, their friends, so forth. And then the war stops, and who knows what's going to happen with this regime. But regardless of that, he said he lived through the Iran-Iraq war, and he said people are then just trying to recover. They're in recovery mode, trying to find food for themselves, for their families, trying to survive, depending on, you know, what the situation is for them. So how anyone expects the Iranian people to then rise up and take over is just a total fantasy.
I think you brought up some really interesting points. Obviously, yeah, what will happen after the war is quite a daunting idea, but I think the most imperative thing that we're doing right now is actually listening to Iranian people and listening to their voices. And, you know, as a Kurdish woman, I think it's really important that we also hold space, that a lot of people are mourning and they can't speak to their families overseas, and that there's internet blockouts, and, you know, and also we've got Persian New Year, Kurdish New Year coming up this weekend. So lots of people are trying to engage and celebrate their culture whilst also having really heavy hearts. So I think one thing that we can all do right now is definitely, if you have Iranian friends or Kurdish friends, or Iraqi friends or Lebanese friends, like, you know, really just listen to them, and give them a platform. I think that's really important right now. But personally for me, I feel like I have Al Jazeera in my head 24/7, and I'm constantly just refreshing and updating. And as someone who had booked international flights for the next 2 weeks through Doha Airport, I've kind of given up on the fact that I'm going to be going to Kurdistan in, you know, the next few weeks. And that's okay, because I guess there are bigger things at play right now, watching what's happening on a global scale. And I think Australians are actually going to start waking up to it as well, once they start getting hit with it in the hip pocket with, like, the gas and stuff, and realising that this war actually benefits absolutely no one.
I think Australians do already know that. The information from America shows that the big majority of Americans are opposed to this war.
Yeah.
And the sad thing for me is that the Iranian community is so divided,
divided
between monarchists, between those that still support the regime, and between people who don't want either. I have lots of left Iranian friends, my husband included, a lot of those left Iranians are too afraid to go to some of our rallies, because they're afraid that they're going to be joining in a rally with people holding Israeli flags, because that's what the monarchists do. But also, they have been attacked, physically and verbally attacked by monarchists in the past at some of those Woman Life Freedom rallies. So it's a really, really sad time for Iranians, and it's definitely not black and white. Some people are trying to paint it as a black and white thing. It's not. So it's a really awful time.
I absolutely agree with you. I think it is all sorts of, like, grey, and it's complicated, and lots of people are treating it almost like it's a soccer game. It's like, which team are you on? And I'm like, it's so much more than that. And this is like, this is much bigger than we realize. And I think lots of people are lashing out online and sharing their opinions about, like, people's lived experiences. And it's, those, personally for me, I've gone to lots of those rallies, and I find myself suddenly surrounded by Israeli flags, and my stomach sort of sinks, and I'm just like, well, I want to be here in solidarity with my friends, but I'm also very uncomfortable being near an Israeli flag and people, you know, who are pro-Zionist. And it's I really am really struggling to unpack it personally. It's been a weird time. And, it can get really violent, unfortunately, as well.
Yeah.
And lots of people aren't going anymore and don't feel comfortable to share their opinions because people are scared that someone's going to attack you on the street.
Yeah, that's so awful to hear, Zara. Yeah. And, like, I mean, it's complicated in one sense, and yet it's not. on in another, in that it really speaks to, you know, that basic human need for self-determination that we want to be able to all of us, well, maybe not Trump, but most people, you know, just want to live in peace and want to be able to live in safety and have a say in how their lives are run and have their basic needs met. Like, I mean, and, you know, apparently these days that's considered radical. It's just, it blows my mind. But, yeah, I feel so much just hearing you, share just how complicated it is. And, like, just, you know, going into Kurdish New Year with, so much grief. And it's just complicated grief as well. And just, I just feel that. And, thank you for kind of sharing, just what it's like for you. And, and to any Iranians listening and who are, you know, anxiously refreshing the news every, you know, few seconds just to see if their family back home are being impacted, like, you know, all solidarity to you. Like, it's just such a difficult time. And yet I think it's more important than ever that the left comes together, and we really want to stand against all forms of colonialism and imperialism. And really, absolutely, it's about the working class coming together against, like, forces like Trump and Netanyahu and their cronies. And, like, we want, you know, Iran should be for the working class, it should be for people's interests, as it should be everywhere. So complicated and yet not at the same time. I think, you know, sometimes, I mean, the billionaire ruling class are really good at muddying the waters, but it's actually really clear on another level. So, yeah.
Why don't we go to something a bit more positive?
Sounds good, sorry.
Yeah. Well, in the near future, I'd be actually keen to play one of the songs that DJ Zara has recommended
DJ
for us.
DJ Zara, yeah.
And then
very diverse tastes as well, Zara. I was having a listen. So she's got some ballads, and then she's got, like, some more poppy kind of hip-hoppy vibes.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring, because it's Kurdish Persian New Year this weekend, and I was like, I just want to celebrate my culture. These aren't songs that I regularly listen to, but I just thought, let's bring in some Kurdish music and show the array of, like, different styles there are, and just get people pumping in their car.
Nice.
So, like, Zane, you've got something ready for us?
Yeah. Okay, so I believe this song is called The Trip by, is it Dera?
Dedia Yildirim. So I actually saw her at Golden Plains last week, and she had the whole crowd in trance, this tiny little Turkish woman with her Turkish guitar, her saz, and she was such a vibe. I've been listening to her for a couple of years. I hope everyone who's listening really just enjoys this one and just flows into it.
Yeah. All right.
Well, yeah, this is the Trip from Dedia Yildirim.
Fantastic.
Damn your play. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back. You are listening to Green Left Radio, and that was Derya Yildirim with The Trip. And on the phone line this morning, we have got Darren Saffin, who's at the public housing picket down at Holland Court in Flemington. Welcome, Darren.
Cheers, man. Thanks, mate.
Yay, Darren. Oh, this is so exciting. So we're doing a live cross, listeners. And Darren, you mentioned that you've got a couple of people with you as well who are also down there at the action.
Yeah, correct. Look, there's a few people here. We're kicking off 7:30. So if anybody is just getting out of bed and wants to come down and join our picket line, 7:30 at 12 Holland Court in Flemington. But yeah, so I've got Ardu, the secretary from Rahu, that can have a chat, and Catherine, a public housing resident who's supporting some people in one of the towers in Kensington, which is next on the hit list, one of the towers for the older residents.
Yeah, oh God, that's awful to hear, but I'm so glad that you guys are down there, and just lovely to talk to you. Would you mind, Darren, if it's okay, just giving a little summary of the issue that's happening there just for the listeners?
Yeah, well, there's a little sort of vigil that's been held here for the last 6 months, morning and evening, called Honks for Housing. A little solidarity line showing support to the residents, like, you know, letting them know that we haven't forgotten them. We know, you know, we know that they're getting relocated, the houses are being destroyed, and we want to know, you know, we want to tell them that we're supporting them through this process. But also, you know, we're standing on the side of the road, a big sign saying Honk for Housing, and getting lots of toots from people going by, so just spreading the word, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
But quite literally right now, with about six people left in the tower, they are starting asbestos removal works.
Wow.
And it's all potentially in breach of
health and safety.
The obligations, from Homes Victoria. Like, we're not sure they've notified the residents, like, we know they're doing this because they've got all these hazardous waste skips that have now been put behind hoarding. No signs on the hoarding about what's going on, so which is a potential health and safety breach there as well. So super important now that, you know, would you be wanting living in a house when someone's removing asbestos at the same time? Like, so that's this is just a horrible situation, you know, to put these people through.
Yeah, it shows such little respect for the residents, hey. I'm not sure, how's things sort of developing so far this morning? Like, have the construction workers arrived, or people will remove the, what's sort of happening there at the moment?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a construction crew on site. Hard to tell how many. They're sort of site, you know, headquarters is behind all this hoarding that they've placed around the bottom of the building, which again is another potential like breach of human rights. If you're living in this building and suddenly all your space around the bottom's taken away. But yeah, they've been there for probably a couple of weeks now, different numbers of workers doing different sort of prep works, you know. But it's really kind of kicking off now. We're expecting the asbestos removal works to be literally starting, you know, now.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Darren, do you know what type of asbestos? Like, is it sheeting or?
I'm not sure. You know, the towers are, 50-odd years old. I imagine there could be sheeting in the kitchens and stuff, but then there's also, is it lagging or something? Like the sort of matting as well in the kitchens and stuff. That kind of stuff for sure. But, not 100% sure.
And do you know if WorkSafe is being called regarding, you know, lack of signage and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we have done that. We've also notified them once before in the past around another issue, but not really sure if there's been any response from them at this stage.
Yeah. And you were sort of saying, Darren, just how this is sort of the latest, like, part of an onslaught against the residents in the public housing towers. And I think there's been this media release about that where there's, 10,000 residents set to be displaced and 6,660 homes set to be demolished during, and of course this is during a housing crisis where there's record levels of homelessness and housing stress. So Yeah. Can you tell, I know you mentioned briefly just around the honks for housing, but the different groups that have sort of come together with that?
Yeah, 100%, which is really good. Like there's Stop the Demo, which is kind of members of social support organisations and networks that look after these people in the houses.
Yeah.
There's 44 Flats United, which are trying to door knock all the people in the towers and, you know, tell them what's going on and tell them what their rights are and, you know, literally give them support like that. Rahu are big on this, obviously Socialist Alliance.
Can you spell out who Rahu is just for people who may not know?
Yeah, of course. Sorry, it's the Rental and Housing Union.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Just wondering, Darren, if any of the lovely people that you're with at the moment would care to jump on and say a few words.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So here's Ardu. He's the Secretary of Rental and Housing Union. He's happy to have a chat. I'll just pass the phone over.
Fantastic. Thank you. This is live radio, folks.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Ardu. Really good to speak to you this morning. So you're speaking with Green Left Radio team on 3CR. And, yeah, we've just heard from Darren just what's currently going on. And so glad that we can kind of be there with you over the airwaves, given what's happening. Would you like to say a few words? Darren's obviously explained a little bit about the context, but we'd love to hear from you and the group that you run as well, the Rudgee group.
No, we're just out here this morning to support the residents who are still in 12 Holland Court, I believe, who are still in the building, and despite that the Homes Victoria are sending in demolition teams to at the moment. We think they're removing asbestos based on the equipment they've been bringing in. They've been hoarding up the entrances. So that's what we're doing this morning. We've been here intermittently over the past week or so. We first observed the bin that says hazardous asbestos and whatnot about a week ago or last week. A few of us either from the Renters and Housing Union or different groups associated have been down here, either just to show support or talk to the demo workers on site. As a tenants union, we really value, when tenants get together and, use their collective power to refuse or to stop the government from pursuing things that violate their human rights.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's so critical that there's community action happening to resist this. And what's sort of been the response with the residents, and how do you think our listeners and community here at 3CR can kind of support the residents?
The residents have been understandably quite hesitant to be public facing. There's been a few of us that have been in contact with them that kind of, know their movements and know when certain families leave, when they've found, relocation offers that they like. But we are in contact with the families that are in the building at the moment. They're not super willing to be front-facing to the media or public or anything, which is understandable because they've faced, neglect, implicit threats, etc., from Homes Victoria. To support them, the most we can do at the moment is just to show up here, to be there, to, obstruct things if we can, to produce media, to get the word out on media, to try and pressure the government, try and pressure local and state government, even federal government if possible, to bring attention to this issue because it's disgraceful.
Yeah, absolutely it is. I'm not sure if Mary or anyone else in the studio wanted to...
I just wanted to say that you guys are doing a fantastic job. As someone whose mother grew up in the Richmond housing flats, I think people really need to understand that this has such a huge impact, and it'll have an ongoing impact for years to come if we lose these housing, which we are. We're seeing it happen right now. So I just wanted to say thank you so much. And anyone who's listening, to keep generating, you know, talk about this and getting definitely media involved, because for me, like, growing up in Brunswick, we had really big housing there at Grand Place, and I used to hang out there all the time in the communities and have so much fun with, like, you know, my Polynesian friends and my Afghani friends and my Samoan friends. And then all of a sudden, they knocked down the housing and no one spoke about it. And now every time I go home, you know, we've got social housing, which is just basically gentrification, and I've lost an entire community. And I don't think people understand how this completely destroys a community. And now I go there and now there's beautiful parks and now there's nice playgrounds, and none of that existed before when the commission housing was there. And it just works out for a small group of people who are gentrifying areas. And ultimately, if we don't do something, that's what's going to happen, you know, where you are right now. And it's happening all over Melbourne. So I think people really need to start talking about it, because once it's gone, it's gone. It's not coming back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like going from tower to tower and doing this kind of stuff for the past couple of years. It's really lovely to see how tightly knit some of these communities are, and, you know, seeing people of all different backgrounds come together. And, you know, even if it's something as simple as running a food kitchen or, you know, some kind of community service or event or whatnot, it's really lovely to see everyone get together. And, you know, the only times that public housing residents or even tenants broadly have won concessions, or they've won things, or they've it's when they've collectively gotten together and demanded things from the government. And, you know, places like Richmond or Footscray have a history of that. And so that's what we're trying to replicate, trying to organise people to collectively get together and try and stop this. Because, yeah, once those communities are ripped apart, they're gone. So,
Okay. We've run out of time, but thank you so much for all the information that you've just passed on. And we encourage lots of listeners, if they can, to go down there and support you at what's the exact address again, please? Oh, 12 Holland Court in
12 Holland Court,
In
Flemington.
And we wish you all the best.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for all the work
you're doing. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Ardy.
Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Yeah. And we didn't get a chance to speak with Catherine, but Catherine was a resident from another public housing tower. And so, yeah, just a shout out to Catherine as well. Like, it's really beautiful that people from other towers are coming to support each other as well. So, yeah. Thanks, Darren and Ardu, for that interview. Yeah. Beautiful.
Good. All right. We might just have a quick announcement and then we'll keep on moving along. You are listening to Green Life Radio on 3CR.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
All right.
We're back
Welcome back. yes, you're on 3CR. You're listening to Green Left Radio. What's new, Mary Merkinich?
Well,
what's new in the world?
New, no, but there's ongoing stuff, and I think this is really positive. I think Zara will think so too. That teachers and education support staff are taking strike action.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah. So many years for this, like, as someone
someone who's worked in education for 10 years, like, when are we striking? When's it happening? And it's just after 13 years of waiting,
I'm like, oh my God, I can feel it in my bones.
Oh, that's
It's about time, isn't it? Because working conditions for teachers and for education support staff are just horrendous. That's why young teachers don't stay.
Horrific. 50% of us leave in the first 5 years. It's bad, people. It's really bad.
Because they constantly pile new stuff onto us. The workloads, like the number of classes we have per week, the number of meetings we have to go to, the class sizes.
The lack of budget.
Yes.
The amount of whiteboard markers that I cannot purchase, the amount of pencils that are missing, it's bad.
It's outrageous that, like, I had a primary school friend who used to buy her own stationery for classes.
I've calculated, I've probably in the past 10 years probably spent about $5,000 of my own money just on books, like literacy books, markers, pens, like subscriptions, because at the end of the day, especially working in a low SES school for me, like, you want these kids to have access to the best stuff. And when you're working out in, you know, in the north, far northern suburbs, and you've got kids who, you know, speak multiple languages and can't speak, you know, English, and, you know, they speak Arabic or they speak Farsi or they speak, you know, whatever, they don't have like any resources for like language-based learning. And what do? You go out and you buy it yourself because you can't watch these kids miss out.
Yeah, yeah. But teachers shouldn't have to do that. That's just outrageous.
I think it's something that you see in particularly kind of feminized public industries, particularly public health and education, where the state relies upon the generosity and the solidarity
of those teachers' workers.
Goodwill.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, it's popular to talk about Scandinavian countries that fund their school systems well, and then you talk to people from Scandinavia and they're like, it's kind of going a bit pear-shaped over here, so don't overcook it.
Yeah.
But those countries that have historically had a much better system, they value the fact that teachers are training a new generation of workers, and that's really valuable to society in the long term. You're teaching people to be able to, you know, find their groove and contribute throughout their entire life and make a really valuable contribution. And that's a really important job.
And any parent who thinks that striking is not in their child's interest is terribly wrong, because teachers are striking not just for themselves, but better working conditions, smaller classes mean that teachers and education support staff can give more time to each individual student.
Absolutely. This, in the long term, is actually in the benefit for everybody. So teachers aren't being selfish. Teachers aren't being, you know, monetarily driven. This is so much more than money. This is all about the working conditions for our students. And ultimately, what we're seeing in Australia is this big class divide where, you know, neoliberalism is sinking in, and we're seeing the government fund all of these private schools. So all of these private schools are getting fantastic education, and there are going to be kids who grow up with access to wonderful education, and then we're going to have a big chunk of kids who are missing out. And the funny thing is, public schools still do really well at, like, not that I'm a pro of like NAPLAN, but like in terms of the data, public schools are doing great. So regardless of the money, like, it goes to show what the teachers are putting in.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I keep stressing an education support staff, because they don't even get a paid lunch break.
I was an education support staff for 5 years, and once I just started doing work at Coles, and I made way more money at Coles than I did as an ES.
That's bad.
It was terrible, but like working as an ES for 5 years really was a humbling experience, and now being a teacher, because I can really feel their pain, because they work so hard, and yeah, you don't get a lunch break, and yet some of them are still expected to do yard duty. They're still doing first aid. And let's be honest, like at a school, you do not clock off. The kids do not stop. They don't stop coming to you with their problems, and you can't say, sorry, no, I can't talk to you right now. Like, I'm not being paid for this. Like, that's not the reality.
I'm on smoke, eh? So leave me alone.
Yeah, I wish I was in the CFMEU. Or even better, the BLF. I think, well, I've said this before, that I think our union leadership has a lot to answer for, but enough of that. So, yeah, next Tuesday, 24th of March, 10:30 at Trades Hall or outside Trades Hall Council for a big rally. Yep. I think parents should come along and support
Everyone should.
Us. Please come and support us because we need it. Yeah. You need it. We all need it.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is everyone's future. So if you're not at work, we expect you at the rally, all right?
And so what time at Trades Hall and what day again?
10:30 a.m. Tuesday the 24th. That's next Tuesday.
10:30
Fantastic.
Is coming Tuesday.
And children, especially should be there with their parents.
Yeah.
And extended families, everybody.
Everyone come.
Everybody.
Come hang out. Bring a banner. Wear your shirt as well. Don't forget to wear your shirt if you're a part of the education union. And if you're not, come in solidarity, please, because we need to send a big message to the government. To what they've offered us is absolutely abysmal, and we need to actually, you know, be given a proper increase and a whole bunch of other stuff with the classroom. So please come and support.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. Should we go to a song, comrades? What do we think?
Yep.
You had another beautiful suggestion on there.
So we're going to listen to one of my favourite artists called Ezim. One of the songs is called Ezim by Rojin. And this is a little bit of a love ballad, but it's also a heartbreak song. It's sung in Kurdish, in Kurmanji. But it's just a vibe. I like bopping to it. And enjoy.
I'm just
saying, can't find it.
Can't find it. Oh no, that's okay.
Is there maybe another song we can do first then, before we go to that one?
Or we could take a little community service announcement and then play a song.
We have the wonderful Kari Superwoman coming into the studio. She's going to help.
Kudos, Yay. Kari. Thank you,
Kari.
So very grateful. She's like the fairy godmother.
This is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in.
It's not share, it's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town. It's a shame job.
It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth, which is going to worsen the housing crisis.
The government is giving public land to private developers. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
We're looking down the future that we don't know what's going to happen. Where are we going to get moved to? Dandenong? Or away from our communities and away from the services that we need.
This is a line in the sand for not only the public housing tenants, but for a Victorian society.
3CR, here to stay.
Hi, I'm Munira from Fitzroy Primary School, and you're listening to Community Radio on 3CR.
So this is in the middle of the pandemic, where this billionaire is suing the Pentagon for a military contract for what most people think is the place that you order books from. It's a very interesting case study in pulling out the different threads of militarism and how it can really be embedded in so many aspects of our lives that we don't even realize that when we order something from Amazon that we're putting workers' lives at risk and that we're supporting what is becoming an increasingly important actor in the military-industrial complex. Exposing that to people, I think, is very important. People will care if they understand that this is how things are all interconnected and linked. It's surfacing that information, it's making that accessible, and making it relevant for people's lives. And I think that is another opportunity that COVID-19 really presents to us, is that we are all connected and these structures are all connected. We can see that much more clearly now than we could before.
We need to keep radical voices on air. Subscribe now.
Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 9419 8377.
This is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in.
It's not share, it's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town. It's a shame job.
It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth, which is going to worsen the housing crisis.
The government is giving public land to private developers. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
We're looking down the future that we don't know what's going to happen. Where are we going to get moved to? Dandenong? Or away from our communities and away from the services that we need.
This is a line in the sand for not only the public housing tenants, but for a Victorian society.
3CR, here to stay.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we've just had some technical difficulties just running
after song. But we persevered for you guys because we want to bring you some sick tunes.
Yeah, we do.
So, yeah, we're going to be listening to Rojin, who is a Kurdish artist, and this is a sort of love ballad but also like a breakup song because why the hell not for your, you know, 7:40 in the morning? Enjoy, listen, and be inspired.
All right, I'll get the tissues.
تمام لي تنا تش كيس تشو تشو كاريج دف من فردي ما هو أبينا تبو مدلي خواد أبو هفتو
تبل دارا ميرادا
مسوزا خواد أبو هفتو
تدقو حتى ميرني
ويروجي واس بنا تمام لي تنا تش كيس تشو تشو كاريج دف من فردي ما هو أبينا تبو اسم ياقو من دلنا تاسم تير نبو بشيدنا تاسم
شيرين روكن دلعي تشبيناكم تجاري هي صغبن بدنياي بتجيان قطنا بي
قابا وروش تيبي رامن
دلي منتي غزبي
دشوتي افجاني من
منا شامو حلبي
كني شيرين روكن دلعي تشبيناكم تجاري هي صغبن بدنياي بتجيان قطنا بي
ازم ياقو من دلعتي تير نبوم جديد ناتا تير نبوم جديد ناتا تير نبوم جديد ناتا
اسم ياقو من دل ناتا
اسم تير نبوم جديد ناتا
تير نبوم جديد ناتا تير نبوم جديد ناتا تير نبوم جديد ناتا
right to be in public space, undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned, stay radical.
And we're going to interview Zara Araz, Kurdish-Australian educator, community organiser, and internationalist, and also a strong feminist.
And DJ.
And DJ. Yes. So, Zara, would you like to tell us about the international conference that you attended, which was held from February the 11th to the 15th in Bogota in Colombia?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that introduction. It was so funny. I was like, am I an internationalist? And when I was there, they were like, absolutely. And I was like, sure. But so basically, I had the most amazing opportunity to go to Abya Yala, which is Latin America. And there was a organization called Women Weaving the Network for Women Weaving the Future, which was basically a collective of women from Kurdistan and from Europe who have basically created a platform for First Nations, grassroots, autonomous organizations that are battling against extractivism, capitalism, colonialism, the patriarchy. And so basically I, from, you know, the 11th to the 15th, got to go and witness some of the most amazing things that I think that have just like changed my life. And hopefully, you know, we can bring that energy back to Australia and, you know, give a platform, same thing here for women, First Nations, grassroots organizations that, you know, are trying to, you know, get land back, get like, you know, our autonomy back, just, you know, remove ourselves a bit from like the stranglehold that we're currently viewing with imperialism. We're all seeing it right now with US and Israel and Iran. Like, it's, this is the reality of like what happens when, you know, there's an imbalance. And we're seeing ecocide and femicide and, you know, like in the reality, like, you know, it's 170 little Iranian schoolgirls that got blown up on the first day. So that's what we're fighting against right now. So, yeah, I got to go to a conference that went for 5 days that basically was, you know, unraveling and weaving on how we can, you know, combat against these forces at play.
Yeah, wow. That's it's so exciting. And I guess, yeah, just love the energy as well that you bring to your work, Zara. It's just so encouraging and inspiring for everyone, I think. And speaking of inspiring, can you tell us a little bit about the Rojava Revolution? I think that's a bit of a hot fave topic for you.
To be honest, I never viewed myself as an expert, but I then realised that actually maybe I do know a little bit more about this topic than I give myself leverage for. But I just wanted to quickly just extrapolate a little bit more on the conference, if that's okay. So basically, for the conference, it was what I guess was so special about it was the first day we had a lot of like Mapuche women and First Nations elders, you know, run this conference in a very different way that we're used to seeing here in Australia. So, for example, like the entry was like $35 and it was trans friendly. It was elder friendly. It was parent friendly. Like, they had carers for kids. They gave us breakfast, lunch and dinner. It was incredibly accessible. And the first day wasn't, you know, the typical, oh, you know, welcome to our presentation and here's our housekeeping and la, 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 la. No, instead it was like a room full of 400 women, like doing arts and craft together, weaving, like yarning together. And I just felt for the first time in my life, it was quite authentic and it was very human. And it created this environment of vulnerability and like human values where we could all actually open up. And it really set the tone for the next 4 days where we did like ceremonial things and, you know, talked about like the seeds of hope and, you know, how we're cultivating women, and that the room was full of like, you know, images of martyrs who have given themselves to the cause and who have fought against the state in terms of state repression, because that's what we're seeing globally. And it was, and there was flowers everywhere and everything smelled beautiful. And I was just like, oh my God, women are the best. Like, women know how to set a vibe. They know how to set a mood. And I think that's what we need to be doing here is like creating, you know, this warmth here as well. And banding together and networking together and, you know, doing art together and stuff. Because I think we all look at these things a little bit like they're a bit woo-woo, but actually it does stuff for the soul.
So, yeah, it's a way of connecting before you go into some sort of lecture theatre and listen to maybe one person or a panel speaking at you. So it was a way of everyone connecting. Yeah, is that what you...
Absolutely, yeah. It just set a different tone. Like, and as an educator, like I've been to so many conferences that, you know, they're quite sterile, they're very boring, they're very just like you just sit there and you're passively just taking everything in. And this was the opposite. Like by the end of the night, we were all dancing together. We basically all got married by the end of the night. Like it was just, it was so much fun. And then and then the next few days like was just like panels of women, you know, talking about like I was listening to this woman from Honduras who was talking about how they got back their land just from drumming, just from standing there against like militia and paramilitary, just being like, you're not taking my land. In fact, I'm taking my land back. And just like showing the strength and like, and they spoke in such a decolonial, like divine way. Like it was just like, it just made me realize how important our language is, and how, you know, we need to learn how to speak like that and speak more engaged with the earth and our own divinity and our own power. So listening to these women talk about like how they're saving the rivers, they're saving education, they're saving their mountains, they're fighting for the earth and they're fighting for each other in the most poetic, beautiful ways that like we don't ever really engage in, because we've only been exposed to, I guess, military and violence because we're living in a patriarchal society. And then, sorry, I'll just, because I could talk about this forever. And then one thing that was really cool was there was over, I think, 8 to 10 workshops on the fourth day, where we all broke up into little mini groups, and we, you know, people were talking about communications and media and how important like independent media is, like what we're doing right now, the fact that 3CR exists and we have a platform and a voice, like that we need to start engaging more in this stuff and like, you know, creating our own curriculum. As an educator, for me, the amount of content that I've made independently, because it doesn't exist, because the government doesn't want our students to have truth telling. They don't want us to, like, they're doing it on a very surface value, but like what are we actually teaching our future generation? Because for me, I grew up just learning about Captain Cook and the gold rush, and I had no idea what was going on. I had to educate myself on the fact that we're living on stolen land and we're not giving platforms to First Nations people. So, you know, I had to like go out there, engage with like, you know, Uncle Robbie Thorpe and go to Crime Scene Australia and go to Camp Sovereignty and decolonize myself. And like, and that's what we want for our students. And this is what this conference was doing. That's what we're trying to get people to engage in. So yeah, it was phenomenal. It was beautiful, and it was a dream, and I want to do that so much here. And if there's anyone listening who wants to, you know, connect with me and try and create like a women's group or like, you know, something similar, come talk to me and let's like weave the future together, please.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Look, actually, Zara, I really appreciate how rogue we've gone, and this is just so necessary, because like sometimes I think we can end up so robotic about how we go about things, and we miss the why, we miss the like the human side, which is we are all human beings and we're meant for connection, and we're meant to live in a world where that fosters positive, healthy, supportive, warm, caring relationships.
Absolutely.
And it's the only kind of socialism that's worth fighting for, in my view.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate so much you sort of sharing that, and just how it's like, it's just sort of expanded your thinking as well, just being in the presence of other people who's sort of going on that journey. But it speaks to just how, it's not just like the systems themselves need changing, but it's also, it's about deconstructing and decolonizing our own ways of relating to ourselves as well, and language and things like that. And that's just so, so equally important. So, thank you for making that so explicit. And I mean, and maybe, you know, with the things like the Rojava Revolution, like I imagine, and just even, you know, engaging with some of the music that you shared with me last night when we're sort of preparing for this show. And it made me realize just how, you know, vibrant and how beautiful Kurdish culture is. And just, I mean, most, you know, lots of different cultures are so beautiful, and there's so many strengths and things that are worth fighting for and protecting for. And so, I can imagine, you know, when, you know, those women and men and, you know, people in between, everybody are coming together to, you know, try and protect their homeland and their culture. Like, it comes from a place of love, and it also comes from, that deep history and understanding that they have. And
Thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. What else would you like to, while you're here in this studio, what else would you like to share with our listeners?
So, basically, if we're, so connecting to Rojava, one thing, so a lot of the women who I met allegedly may have or may not have gone to Rojava. I cannot confirm or deny that information. So Sue Bolton asked me a really interesting question a couple of weeks ago. She said, you know, what is the future of Rojava? And I guess Before I expand on what Rojava is, I just want to tell listeners, like, the Rojava is, you know, and it's an experiment. It's an idea. It's an ideology that's been, you know, created, that's based and rooted in a women's revolution, that it's really driven to the core of it by women, for women. And Sue was asking me what the future of it is, and I explained to her that ultimately, it's an ideological experiment. It's an idea, and what we hope to do is create lots of, you know, mini Rojavas all around the world, and that we plant these seeds and we cultivate them, and they grow, and they'll sprout like beautiful flowers everywhere. So, Rojava is basically, for those who don't know, it's a part of Kurdistan, and it's basically, legally, in terms of borders, it's within the borders of Syria. But Rojava is a really special place because it's an experiment that has been able to be cultivated without, I guess, intervention from the Syrian government. So basically, in 2011, we saw the fall of the Assad regime, and what that created was this empty space. Where people suddenly could create their own government. And basically, we found ourselves watching a group of people with the, you know, values of, you know, women, this, that the women are going to be the ones who are going to basically fix things. So we found that, you know, we've got a women's military, the YPJ, where women have learnt how to, you know, defend their bodies and defend their land. And then I'm sure lots of listeners had seen, you know, the women of Kobani, you know, fighting against ISIS and, you know, liberating the Yazidi women who were, like, you know, being, you know, sex slaves and tortured and all the horrible things that we were seeing come out of there. And it just goes to show how important it is to educate women, and also to, I'm not pro-violence, but ultimately we need to also arm ourselves to protect ourselves, because these are the realities that happen when you're dealing with, you know, paramilitaries. And I know this isn't something we have in Australia, but globally this is something that women need to actually do, unfortunately. Yeah. We also saw from Rojava these amazing towns called Jinwa. Jinwa is a women's town, and basically no men are allowed, sorry. But yeah, there was a space for women who have experienced domestic violence or oppression, and it was a safe space where women could become educated and learn, you know, different skills and create these co-ops and basically, you know, protect each other and, like, cultivate, like, their own food and, you know, support each other with their children. And I just thought, like, wouldn't that be amazing to have everywhere, all around the world, these little women town where we're all just protecting each other and just having a nice, safe time.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because, like, you kind of think about, like, before colonization here, that's really what was happening for most First Nations women. They were doing exactly that. And, yeah, and just how much, yeah, like, capitalism, I mean, obviously, patriarchy predates capitalism, but it's, yeah, it very much disrupts the natural relationships that we would otherwise have.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Rojava is basically the women's revolution, and I think there's a lot in there that I highly recommend listeners to go out and, like, you know, engage in and study and listen to, because it's I know that there's lots of different opinions on it, but I think ultimately this is a women's cause, and that we need to actually start putting our, you know, energy into women, because ultimately I think we're really going to clean up some of the mess that we're seeing right now. And we can do that here in terms of, you know, fighting against extractivism here, against mining corporations, and, you know, supporting First Nations women here, because there are lots of women down at Camp Sovereignty, or like Lydia Thorpe, that, like, need our support, that, like, you know, need our voices, and we need to show solidarity.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, excuse me. So, one question was, why do you think Rojava is under attack? But I think that's sort of really clear why.
Oh,
it's such an example but
yeah, like, well, basically we're getting attacked from all sorts of things, whether that's the patriarchy, because, you know, we've got ISIS and we've got the Turkish government, we've got the Syrian government, we also have the US government that, like, you know, doesn't want to see a socialist experiment, you know, you know, succeed. Like, we was watching what they're doing to Cuba, we're watching what they're doing right now, and ultimately no one, unfortunately, in the patriarchy wants to, like, see this idea flourish and succeed, because it's showing that there is actually a different way of living and engaging with the world. So why is Roja Varan under attack? Why are women under attack is really the main question. Is this, like, because they want us to be repressed, they don't want us to be educated, and they don't want us to have self-determination and autonomy, because that's really what this town is about. That's why we're seeing Rojava under attack. It's so much more. But also, like, if you look at the, like, if I'm going to get into a scientific thing, like, and stuff, like, based on where it is with the Turkish border and stuff, there's lots of different plays in terms of, like, you know, military ground and stuff and water, and it's very complicated. But I also, whilst you guys are all listening, definitely look into genealogy, which is the science of women, and it's this Kurdish idea of, you know, studying women and looking into ideas of, like, Jinjian Azadi, which is woman, life, freedom movement. I highly recommend that you guys go investigate that. Cause
how do you spell that?
Jin, as in J-I-N, so woman, and then Jian, which is J-I-N-Y-A-N, which is freedom. And then, that's life. And then Azadi, A-Z-A-D-I, which is, I think I did that well. And then, which is freedom. So woman, life, freedom movement. And this was actually a term coined by Ocalan, who is one of the fighters against, I guess, repression. And he's currently in prison right now. And lots of people are trying to get him out of prison right now. But yeah, that was a term coined by him.
Yeah. What a beautiful conversation. Zara, and I know that you're going to go and do some more study or learn a bit more as well about Democratic Confederacy. So I propose that we get you back in here for maybe part two, and we'll talk about that in a bit more detail, because I'm so keen to learn more of the ins and outs of that as an alternative to capitalism and the current terrible system that we have. So, but maybe we might go to perhaps a little break, because we'll have an interview coming up shortly.
Yes, we might have to do a quick condensed activist calendar, and then we're going to be Katarina Sinani, who's the candidate for secretary for the members' first ticket for the United Workers Union. And they're running a staunch campaign. And
yeah, speaking of democracy, that's democracy in action and people power fighting back. So that'll be a great interview coming up. Let's have a break and then the activist calendar.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining Northeast Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
Whoa, top of the morning to you. Welcome back. And you are listening to Green Left Radio. You're on 3CR, the staunchest activist radio station in Melbourne, possibly Australia, possibly even
the world. Why not? Just
the
say
universe.
It,
yeah. The universe.
No,
wow. But we're all completely humble.
It's not a competition. Yeah. There's a lot of staunch activists out there doing activist media, and we all stand together. As
yeah,
one.
We do. That's right, a correct answer, Zane. No.
It is 7 minutes past eight, yeah. And it's activist calendar time.
Woohoo! Yeah, no, we're just doing our part, and we've all got a part to play. So, all right, so the activist calendar, and I know I say this every time, but please, dear listeners, if you don't already receive the activist calendar, you need to log on to your computer and go to greenleft.org.au/events and sign up for email updates, because you'll get a really nice email once a fortnight that has all the local events in your area, and that will just make your life a whole lot easier and interesting. So do it. Okay, so tomorrow we have a protest rally against racism, scrap Labor's Trump-style deportation laws. That's at 2 p.m. at the State Library. That's going to be a really important one to get to. And then that's followed by a film screening at Free Kaneki Solidarity in Docklands at 5 p.m. Zane, did you want to...
No, I was just waiting.
Oh, you're making hand gestures at me. Yeah. Oh, okay.
No.
Oh, cool.
Carrie in the studio next door. I'm just gesticulating wildly.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Sorry, comrades. All right. We've got the Degrowth Festival coming up on Sunday, March 22nd. So that's this Sunday, 11 a.m. That's a really important one. If you care about the environment, this is probably the biggest rally of the year to get to. So this is all about native forest. Oh, sorry, what am I talking about? This is a degrowth forest.
But the rally is prepare for the march for forests, 11 a.m. Yep. Parliament Gardens, yep. On Sunday the 22nd.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
That's this coming Sunday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Really important one to get to there. Yep. Yeah.
I'll be going there as well if you want to come and meet me.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Well, there's an incentive. I mean, if you didn't already care about native forests, like, yep, you definitely want to meet Zara. So then, go there among the thousands of people. You'll find her, no worries.
And then smoking ceremony at 2:30 p.m. Camp Sovereignty, King's Domain in Linlithgow. Oh, I don't know how to say that.
Linlithgow.
Thank you, Zane. Avenue in Melbourne.
Yeah.
There's also an interfaith holy celebration, Mosaic, organised by, there's a whole heap of letters. Does someone know what these letters stand for? What organisation that is? HFHRANZ Melbourne.
Apologies, I don't, but that... that sounds like a great great idea, though. So, yeah, try and get to that. That's 3 to 5 p.m. at Jewel Hall. And just looking quickly here at some of the other events. We've got our Radical Book Club. If listeners don't already know about this and they're in Melbourne, we at Green Left and in partnership with Socialist Alliance at the Resistance bookstore, we have a monthly book club where we read radical books, and we are reading the OG Communist Manifesto. Nice. Very digestible, very spicy.
Delicious.
Very delicious, exactly. So come along and we'll talk about that book and have some snacks and have some great conversations. That's next Friday, the 27th. At 7 p.m. at the Resistance Centre, 407 Swanson Street.
My personal favourite bullet point out of the Communist Manifesto is point number 7 out of 10, the restoration of the soil in accordance with the common plan. A lot of people want to talk about workers' rights and this and that, but some OG ecological stuff happening there.
That's... And animals.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, Marx was such a visionary in so many ways. I mean, just brilliant. Really, obviously, pretty important book for lefties. Come along and we'll chat about it. So there's a really important rally as well next Saturday, Hands Off Cuba and Venezuela at 12
p.m. Absolutely, come and show up.
Yes, please do. And that's followed by a fundraiser and solidarity at... for Cuba, solidarity with Cuba at 4 p.m. at MUA, 46 Island Street, West Melbourne at 4 p.m. Entertainment, raffles, food and refreshments. So sounds like a great time.
Word. All right, well.
Can I just quickly throw in one more thing?
Yeah.
There's on Sunday, there's also, if anyone's before the Degrowth Festival, this Sunday there's going to be the Nevroz Kurdish New Year at Coburg Lake. If anyone wants to come and see some Kurdish culture and celebrate the Kurdish New Year and just do some renewal, it's a celebration of like spring equinox overseas, and yeah, it's all about renewal and cleansing ourselves. If somebody yeah wants to come and cleanse themselves, please come and join yeah us Sunday at Coburg Lake. It's 11 till 6 p.m.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's also the autumn equinox here, or Maybon. So yeah, fantastic. Yeah. All good. Right. I think it's interview time. Is that right?
It sure is.
Sure is. Excellent.
All right. So it is with great excitement that I'm able to introduce to you, 3CR listeners, Katerina Sinani, who is the National Farms Director and an organiser of the United Workers Union, and is also the candidate for Secretary on the Members First ticket for the upcoming United Workers Union election. Welcome, Kat.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, so good to have you on the show, Katerina. Like, we had you speak at our conference, I think, a little while ago, didn't we? And I just, yeah, everything that you shared about, you know, how you're organising the farming workers and all of that, like, it was just so inspiring. So, we're so happy to have you on the show this morning.
Well, I'm really happy to be here, and thank you for asking me to come and, you know, have a chat to you.
So, Kat, we might ask you in a minute about Members First policies and some of the Members First stuff, but just to begin with, can you actually tell us a bit of your background as a farms director, working with a lot of migrant workers and really trying to shift the situation there and working with those members?
Kind of like, as you said in the intro, I mean, I am the director of farms at the moment, but really all that means is that's kind of like a title that I hold, but my actual job is to be an organiser, and that's what I've been for a long time. And I predominantly organise migrant workers across a lot of our industries, not just farms, but also across food, logistics, and manufacturing. But probably the work that I'm the most proudest of, and the team that I love, is our farm members and our farm workers, because, you know, it kind of proves that you can build a union where there is no union, because that's basically the industry we went into to organise, where unions had basically abandoned an industry that was predominantly cash contractors, documented and undocumented workers, seasonal workers, and decided that it was too hard to organise. And over the last 10 years, we've been able to prove that you can organise workers in this sector, and you can also smash like mass exploitation on scale by actually having workers join their union and take action, including the first farm strike, which was at a farm in Piercedale. So I think that's kind of the work that I've been dedicated to over the last sort of decade, in and out, but also I've been running the training programs for our union as well, in teaching all our members and delegates how to build power and how to win in their workplaces. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me. I mean, I have a very long history. I don't think I need to bore all your listeners with all, but predominantly I'm an organiser who spends a lot of their time in lunchrooms with workers trying to work out how we're going to build a union and how we're going to fight and win.
Oh, Katerina, it's so refreshing just to hear you speak, and it's such a much-needed counter to all the bureaucratic just BS that happens in unions. And so, thank you for all that you do. And can you tell us, please, about the Members First ticket and what you guys are running and the platform that you're running for?
So Members First is basically a group of members, delegates, organizers and some leaders who have come together to fight for our union and get our union back to basics and focused on both our industrial power and building industrial power and strength, and also putting our members back in charge of their union. So it's basically around, it is going to be the biggest union election in the history of unions. We're structured very differently to many of the other unions, and it is a national election. But ultimately, Members First is just about thousands of members who've come together who want to take back their union and want to have a say over their union and to get back to having some industrial muscle again and back in the workplace organising. So in terms of the platform has been built by our delegates, hundreds of them. We've had like so many conversations and meetings across a very long time about the things that they want to change in their union. And really, probably if I explain the policies and the platform in two ways, one is about organising and building power, and in terms of that, that's about getting back to the foundations of what a union really should be about. It's about face-to-face workplace organisers. It's putting more organisers on the ground in our workplace to support our members, not just in the cities, but especially in the regions, where we have seen in our union regional organisers being made redundant, and a shift away from workplace organising into a digital space. And our view is that you build the union from the workplace out. I mean, I just talked about the farm workers. Yeah. That would not have been built had we not put organisers on the ground to work with workers in that sector, to be in their farms, to be in their houses, to be in their lunchrooms. So the number one platform is more organisers. The second bit is about our delegates. So we used to have amazing training in our union, run by our union for our members, but also that training was absolutely geared towards building power and organising and winning and taking action. That was outsourced. So we're saying we're going to bring that training back. And that training doesn't just happen in the classroom, it also happens on the road. We were very proudly a union that had training where workers could come in, delegates could come in and experience what it was like to organise, not just in their workplace, but in other workplaces. And that built like really strong solidarity, but it also helped our members and our delegates understand what it takes to organise in sectors where there is no union or a low union and help other members. So we're going to bring that back. And then the other two components of the organising is a strike fund. We've never had a strike fund in the history of our union.
Yes!
Get it.
I know. It's been like, this has been a personal thing for me for a long time. And so I feel like this election and Members First is about like actually breaking through some of the barriers.
Yes.
But also, in the last 4 years, we have actually not lent like complete support to striking workers in the way a union should. And I think the strike fund is both a symbolic thing about saying we will support action in its form, but also it's a financial thing because we're saying we're going to put $1 million up front into the strike fund instead of giving $1 million donation to the Labor Party.
Thank
because
you.
We believe workers can win. Yeah, workers can win when they take action. We know that. Yeah. We know that. We're seeing it next week with the teachers,
yes,
right? Like, you know, and the last one is really about, like, our union fees. It is a commitment to freeze fees in order to grow the union and get the union into a position where fees are not a barrier. But it's actually a lot more than that. It's about saying that the union should be funding everything in terms of its members and organising, and a strong union is one that grows everywhere, and we should actually have a way to talk about fees that don't create a barrier to growth. So they're kind of the organising platforms, but the and then there's a component which is about allowing members to take their union back, and that's about transparency and accountability. So that's about bringing back delegates' conferences. And if any of you have been on our social media in the last kind of few hours, you'll see we're saying that the minutes of all of our meetings should be released and there should be no secrets between the executive of this union and the decisions they make and our members. They should know everything and we should report back just like our delegates do to their members in their workplace.
Absolutely. Wow. Oh.
Can I actually just ask Kat, just on that topic? So I'm a CFMEU member, and it's a throwback to the old BLF days that we have monthly branch meetings where any rank and file member can turn up. and the union leadership will be there. Maybe not every member of the union exec or whatever, but there'll be, you know, a couple of the union leadership figures will be at that meeting, and you can ask questions and you can hear back, and it creates that direct link. Is that something that would be part of this overall kind of package of democratic reform? Would you have something? I imagine it's difficult for you because you're a lot more spread out, your membership.
It's a great question. And yes, we want to actually talk about with our members and our delegates how we open up democracy in a much bigger way. So yeah, I mean, probably the difference between the CFMEU and our union, but also lots of other unions, is that we are a very big union. We have lots of industries and we have like scale, but that shouldn't actually stop us from thinking about ways in which we can have regular meetings with members and delegates and open up our structures. So there's multiple ideas around it. Yep, we could start having like regular meetings in industries, for example, where actually the people in charge and the leadership should come and address people at that and be able to ask questions. We can do that across the state, which is like having actual delegates conferences. So we've kind of put a few concrete things in around it, but actually for me, especially as I'm running as a state secretary in Victoria, is one of the things I want to be able to do is bring our delegates together very quickly once we win and actually have the discussion about how we're going to open things up. I have run, when I have been allowed to run, meetings of our organisers in Victoria. I've invited delegates to that because I believe that there should be no difference between whether you are an organiser, a member or a delegate. All of our forums should be opened up to our members, and I'm not afraid to have delegates and members in rooms with organisers debating the direction of our union and us being accountable. Mm-hmm. So I think I think we need to do a lot more. I also am really, I think anyone that is elected should have an ability to have access. Our members should be able to access those people. They should have their phone numbers. They should be able to call all of the members that I meet. I give them my phone number and they call me. I have members all around the country who ring me all the time because actually if I'm going to get elected, I'm being elected by the members. There should be no locked rooms, no locked meetings, nothing that has a barrier between us and our members in terms of access to the people they elect as their leaders. So, yeah, we need to go a lot further potentially than what we've announced, but I would like to do that with our delegates and members and have that discussion and allow them to make some decisions about what they think they would like as a democratic structure in their industries and in their union.
Kat, we love you. I just want to say that. But also that's just incredible. And of course, I know we've got some others. We've gone a bit off script, and honestly, I don't care at all for scripts. So, and you've just done such a beautiful job of explaining, just really bringing it back to what a union should be about,
mm-hmm.
and demonstrating how it can operate in a democratic way. And I know, pretty much everything that you've done, at the UW has demonstrated that, and you're such a champion for it. And I was just curious as well, for listeners, If you could give them just a direct message, and I hope they'll listen to the whole interview, but if you really wanted to give them a take home message, what would you tell them?
I'm hoping some of your listeners are our members.
Oh, I reckon they might be, and if not, they should be.
I did think about what would be my comment, but I think my message would be around how we build power in the union. And so I fundamentally believe that power is built in the lunchrooms with workers instead of in the back room with politicians. And I think for me, my message would be that actually, part of this election and this fight in our union, but more broadly in this union movement, has to be about committing to organise workers and allowing workers to make decisions over their working lives and actually having a movement that is focused on building real power and not allowing someone else who sits in Parliament to make a decision on their behalf. Power actually comes from resistance, action, workers speaking up, workers acting together, and workers being collective. So my message to the to your listeners would be, wherever you can within your unions, you should be trying to open up the doors so that members are actually participating, that we're allowing workers to make those decisions, and you should resist anyone that closes a door or stops you from actually having that say. And I think that would be my message, like to your listeners, because every member should be an active member in their union, and they need to be active in their workplace, but actively protecting democracy in their own union. So that would be my key message to your listeners.
That is so inspiring and just a fantastic point. Sorry, Zane, did you want to?
Oh, just we're getting pretty close to 8:30.
Yeah, so
we'll,
we need to wrap
if you could
up,
just comment a little bit on the context today for United Workers Union members with the cost of living, and maybe just briefly what are some of the on the job issues, and also I've heard rumours that United Workers Union will be supporting the teachers' strike on Tuesday.
let's start with the second one, and then go up. Look, I can't really speak on behalf of the United Workers Union in the sense that I don't control or have power. That's left up to 8 people in our union who currently have power about whether we support the strike. But Members First will be supporting the strike with the teachers. I will be there, and I've invited organisers and members to come with me. And I think my greatest disappointment is that we should have our early learning educators out on strike with our teachers next week, because actually they are falling behind, and their claim that the teachers are making for 30% wage increase should apply across the entire education sector. So we are definitely going to be there. We'll have some early learning members hopefully with us. And my children, who both go to public schools, their school is shutting for the day. And so hopefully I'm going to drag my teenage girls along with me to come to the strike as well. So 100% we'll be there.
Fantastic.
And in terms of the issues for our members, absolutely it's cost of living. That is the biggest issue. But, you know, it's far more fundamental than that. Like, I can see, after speaking to so many of our members in the last few months in lunchrooms, and I've just gone to so many work sites speaking to them about what is happening for them, there is this massive disconnect between what is happening in the workplace and how members feel about their wages, their conditions, about like the rising cost pressures, about how hard it is and how hard they have to fight for wage increases, and what they think is happening in the broader union movement and politically. And I see this disconnect, and I think the biggest crisis for our members, our union and the movement, is that the working class is moving further and further away from the political debates of the country, and they are absolutely focused on trying to survive. And I think that unless unions are actively fighting in the workplace to build conditions and wages and having workers have the fight, that disconnect is going to actually undermine an entire...
Indeed. All right, sorry. We're really going to go. We've got like 10 seconds to go.
Sorry. Right. And vote Members First.
Yes.
Join your union.
All right.
And
that's
join
us.
Join your union.
Green Left Radio.
What a show.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1-800-634.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.